Hey there, I'm Jason P. Woodbury, and this week on Transmissions, I'm joined by Justin Gage, Aquarium Junkard's head honcho and founder. It's a little bit of a behind-the-scenes conversation about some big changes coming to Aquarium Junkard in 2024. On April 8th, we are transitioning to a subscription-based model. Transmissions has some of the smartest listeners in the podcast zone, and you're all very tapped in, so I know I don't have to explain to you how the online landscape has shifted or cite the numerous publications undergoing sea changes or simply going away. But this decision wasn't reached lightly, and we linked up to discuss it in detail. Aquarium Junkard means a lot to me, and it has since long before I wrote for the site. I remember first living in Tempe in 2006, where I'd moved from rural Arizona, and the way I would scour the site and write down recommendations and look for titles at my job at the record store. It was a heady time, and back then, Justin's sensibility spoke to me, and it still does now. The site is out of step with the music press in general, offering a unique viewpoint and a discerning voice, and as Aquarium Junkard nears its 20th anniversary, we are proud to embark on this next chapter. With your support, we can keep this remarkable project rolling along. As for Transmissions, it's going to remain free for all and available in your podcast feed. But instead of plugging the Patreon as often, which we will continue along as a bonus means of supporting AD and this show, I'll be reminding you weekly that the best way to support Aquarium Junkard is by subscribing to our online music magazine. And you can do so right now. We're offering early memberships at Aquarium Junkard, so head on over. Or if you still need some more information, sit tight. Here's Justin Gage on this week's episode of Transmissions. Thanks so much for being with us. I'll speak with you more on the other side. Justin, right before we started rolling tape, we were talking about 2017, and I was reflecting on this recent change that we're making at Aquarium Junkard and thinking about when we initially launched the Patreon. Was that 2018 that we...
That was 2018, yes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny because I remember 2017 being like... I think previous to that, I've always enjoyed working with AD, but it was like 2017, I was not so green anymore, had been working with you for a while. I think we originally relaunched the podcast in 2016. So 2017 really feels to me like one of those years where I really started to get under the hood with you at Aquarium Junkard. And so flipping the Patreon switch was such a big decision. I remember you and I having a lot of conversations about that, and we've had a lot of conversations about this this recent switch. But you know, you've always been pretty resistant to making Aquarium Junkard a pay site. What has it felt like for you lately coming to the conclusion that the time has arrived for that to be the right move?
Yeah, I think my career after college, I graduated in 1999, began on the internet. I was an entertainment editor for .com in Atlanta right after I got out of school. And during the .com implosion in 2000, I then moved over to AOL's Digital City site, and I was their music editor. I've been, online for, the majority of my career, and I loved the weird, wild, open internet. In terms of pay sites, the idea of a walled garden, never really appealed to me, as I did love just the openness of it and just the various tendrils of discovery. But as you and I have discussed the last several months with the rest of the team, we're just getting to a point where, anyone even remotely familiar with media, not to mention music media, is likely aware that it's not really doable anymore.
At least not using that sort of old model.
In terms of, where everything is underwritten by advertising, as the majority of advertising spends have since moved on to, social media buys, where right. Those budgets are going into your Facebook, Instagram, et cetera. So that is ultimately kind of what has brought us to this point.
Yeah. I think that the thing is, over these last couple months, we've seen really pretty substantial changes the last couple of years, substantial changes in the music media ecosystem. We've seen big changes at, you know, places like Pitchfork. When people think about Aquarius or, you know, Vice going away almost completely, I think,
right,
and all of these different things, these sort of legacy media brands that are morphing, changing, sort of having to face this changed online landscape. When I think about Aquarium Drunkard, I think about, you know, the blog rock boom was a really big moment, and I feel like it shifted a lot of attention onto the internet, right? So the thing is, you were able to carve out an audience, and as were other blogs. When we look at that landscape, not a lot of those publications are still, you know, functioning or humming along. I think part of what makes Aquarium Drunkard so interesting in this new media landscape is that, you know, it's never really been a business per se. It's a cultural project, but it's straddled the line, I think, right, between a blog, and we tend to think of ourselves as an online magazine these days. And
right.
I think we're pretty justified in thinking it that way. You know what I mean? But you've weathered a lot of different storms. What about this one feels, you know, different or novel or interesting to you? Do you think that we are at an interesting sort of inflection point in terms of the way people think about how they interact online with, you know, something like Aquarium Drunkard?
I think so. I mean, if you look in the rear view, Aquarium Drunkard started in 2005, you know, out of my apartment in Venice Beach.
Yeah.
when I lived over on the west side for a little bit. And I think when it launched, there were, I don't know, maybe 10 quote unquote music blogs. And then it seemed like within several years there were thousands.
A lot more.
yeah. Right. And, you know, as you referenced, there aren't that many, independent, music websites out there anymore. It's just, we've seen this mass reduction. And when you see things like the recent, Pitchfork news, or you reference Vice magazine, I mean, that's wild that that's happening. I mean, I think they were valued at what, $5 billion, you know, several years ago. And also thinking about, you know, some of the more interesting music writing that I was finding over the last decade were places like Red Bull Music Academy or Bandcamp.
Yeah.
But then when you
right.
think about that, you know, those were, the editorial side, that was just an offshoot of a product. That's not how they were, you know, they were making money. They weren't, you know, dependent on the editorial side. And, you know, we've seen both of those, you know, drastically change. So again, it's just, we are now in a landscape where media, especially independent media, for something like Aquarium Drunkard is doing, it's going to have to be in part funded by a reader base.
Right. You know, and the thing that we, you know, part of the reason why I was so excited to have you on to talk about all this is just so that we could help clear up questions that people might have, right? Which is, like, we launched the Patreon ostensibly to do similarly to this move right now. We launched the Patreon to be able to do a couple key things: pay contributors modestly, but we pay them, you know, and that counts for something, I think, especially in the online game where lots of places don't, you know, or can't. So I respect
right.
it. There was a time where AD didn't have the financial structure
right.
to do it, you know, and there was volunteer stuff. I certainly, you know, did as well. So that was good. But as it's grown, the Patreon has been great. But I think the thing that we think, and we're not going to shut the Patreon down, we're just going to alter the way that we use it. It's just a bonus now, is the way we're thinking about it, you know. It's a bonus way to support Aquarium Drunkard. The primary way that people will be able to support us is by subscribing. But the thing about the Patreon model, and it's a good model for people who it's worked for, I just think that you and I have been having this conversation and thinking about it in our own media consumption lives. you can only be subscribed to so many Patreons. You can only be subscribed to so many Substacks, all of that, you know, and you got to pick how you're going to spend your creative dollars. But I think that for us, this notion of putting a paywall around Aquarium Drunkard definitely isn't to exclude anybody. We hate that that is a, even that's a side, right, you know, product of it. But it's just to say, essentially, we're going to need support for creating Aquarium Drunkard. That is the sort of thing that we're creating. And it constitutes all these individual nooks and crannies. But
I think, you know, the Patreon was set up, and I think we communicated correctly that, you know, we were wanting to support the thing, which is aquariumdrunkard.com and radio and podcast and everything else that we do. And, you know, I think the model of Patreon is just, it's kind of more geared toward people that are, you know, obviously wanting to do that, but they're also kind of wanting the extra goodie, you know, whether it be, you know, a coffee mug or a, you know, a hat or a shirt or whatever it is. And, you know, we found that, you know, someone would get their hat in the mail and then they would, you know, discontinue support. And I think that's more the nature of that enterprise versus, you know, us not communicating, that, you know, we're needing support for the actual thing. Like, you know, sure. You and I talked about how, you know, if we were a band going into the studio, like, you know, we put everything into the album and that is aquariumdrunkard.com and those offshoots, and there's not a lot of B-sides left over to, you know, to throw onto a Patreon site.
I think that that's a big part of it. And I think that, like, you know, for people who maybe their creative project is their job and it's what it can do full time, you know, then maybe that Patreon thing, it's easier to get in that cadence and whatever else and sort of feed that that kind of interaction with the fan base. But I do think that we really do put a lot of effort into the website itself, and it is outside of our actual, you know, how we earn livings, you know, and so I do think it's good for people to recognize that, like, that is in and of itself what we're trying to support. And a lot of people don't realize, I mean, it's not just the time of the contributors involved. There's also hard costs associated with it, you know, in terms of server space, in terms of storage, in terms of the various things that we need to keep making the site. So hopefully, I mean, I think people are going to be excited by this opportunity. And I think hopefully it helps us to continue fought. I mean, something that's been really important to me over these last, this season of the podcast specifically, I've been telling people, send me emails, talk to me, tell me about what you're liking about the show, tell me about what it means to you, you know, specific to Transmissions. And for me, that is helping to create and foster a sense of community about people who think that this is of value. And
right.
I think that this offers us another way to make that relationship even more connected, right? I mean, something that we've talked about, and who knows, we're going to figure stuff out as we go along. That's the other thing, is that this is new for us in some ways, but we've talked maybe about turning the comments on, you know, back mm-hmm. on, because the kind of people who are going to be hanging out on the site are the kind of people who are going to want to have that interactivity. And in the old days, I mean, dude, I think that you and I think I started doing stuff with AD because of frequent commenting, you know what I mean? Like, it's a
yes,
that was such a huge part of the site, and it was such a great, I mean, there would be little side conversations going on and trading, you know, file trading and stuff happening in the comments. What an incredible time that was. And so I wonder if maybe one side effect of this new change will be having the opportunity to do more stuff like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, back to social media in terms of, you know, how disruptive it was, you know, across the board. Again, one of the things that I thought was really interesting about the site for years was the robust comment section. And then when social media really took off and got cooking, that certainly dwindled to the point that when we did the site redesign in 2018, you know, I made the decision, we may as well just turn these off. But, you know, now moving into a subscription model, as we've discussed, it might make sense to turn that back on and have those conversations. Because some of those conversations in the comments, you know, they would go, you know, some of those into the hundreds. And especially in the early days, those were sometimes, you know, as fascinating, if not more, you know, than the actual post, you know, the various places those would lead. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting things that we're going to be able to do with this new model, just by the nature of it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty exciting stuff. And I think that when I look at the media landscape, I'm really proud that Aquarium Drunkard is, you know, does what it does. Because as you mentioned, there's the site and then there's your serious show. And, you know, so I think of it almost as like, you know, all these tributaries coming off of the main sea, right?
You've 100%.
Got like, you've got Aquarium Drunkard, you've got the serious show, which is its own thing and has its own sort of dedicated zone. And then we've got, you know, the Lanyap sessions, which at this point, and this is something that I wanted to bring up, the Lanyap sessions, not just because they're one of my favorite things that Aquarium Drunkard does, but because of the way that we tend to interact with artists when doing those. Mm-hmm. We let artists put out whatever they want. You can do whatever you want with a Lanyap session. You know, we just ask that you release it as a Lanyap session, but we don't ask for any compensation. We don't want to get cut in on that. You know, of course, when you make the comps with Light in the Attic and ORG and stuff like that, that's different. But you know what I mean? And to me, I think that that speaks to the sort of artist-friendly model of what we're doing and how there is an emphasis on supporting the artist, I think, through the kind of cultural reportage that we do, you know, that I think puts the emphasis in a different place than a lot of media, where the sort of emphasis is maybe put on supporting the brand itself, right? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, in terms of the Lanyap sessions, which I think those began, if I'm not mistaken, in 2010. I mean, that's, you know, that's
wow.
Been, yeah, I know it's wild. That's been its own little universe, and it's only gotten more interesting and robust as the years have gone on. And like you said, the, you know, all the rights do remain with the artist. We just serve as kind of a creative conduit to get these things out into the world. And not always, but often we do try to tie those to album releases. So they kind of sit alongside something, like, again, Lanyap, like something extra.
A little bonus, right.
A little bonus. Yes. Yes. And those are of course going to continue under the new model. But yeah, the site, you know, the overall vision is certainly artist forward, above all else.
To the point that, you know, something that it's been great having these conversations with you and the other Aquarium Drunkard contributors and the sort of brain trust, and sort of specific shout outs to Tyler and Chad, you know, for their great insights. But I think that, you know, when I think about what attracted me to Aquarium Drunkard in the beginning and continues to be a part of the allure, is the sort of way that there is a sense of mystery and artistic sort of, there's just a more artistic approach often, I think. That's something that I've always been really drawn to and appreciative of in terms of your own style, right? Is the sort of the considered way that you approach stuff. And to the point that, like, we have never, I mean, we shout out the Patreon every episode of this podcast, you know, and we do advertising too on this podcast, but it's never been where our focus is, right? Like, the focus is always going to be on the site itself, to the point that, you know, Aquarium Drunkard to me feels much more like a collective, you know, than a sort of top-down model, you know what I mean?
But right.
With your vision at the core of it, you know, and the fact that we're coming up on 19 years, going to be 20 years of this website, you know.
Yeah, 19 in May.
think of what it takes to keep 20 years of anything going.
Oh,
you know?
Anything. You know, a relationship, you know, a business, whatever it is. Yeah. I mean, that's two decades
band.
Is a long time.
A label, anything. And you know, there is a lot of passion and a lot of dedication on the part of the many contributors who chip in, on the artists who, you know, let us feature their work on, you know, in terms of like, to me, it's just, that's all, there's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, without all those factors working in the right way, this thing can't last 20 years, you know, people sharing what we make, people reacting to it, people putting it out into the world, outlets like WFMU tweeting out a link, you know, whoever, you know, those things, they make a huge difference. Over the last couple of years, we've seen a deep shift in the way people use social media and the way that they interact with social media. And I feel like people want maybe a more personal internet, a little bit more intimate of an internet experience. And I wonder if perhaps this is another way that we can, you know, facilitate that, you know? And I think that, I hope so. I mean, it's funny, that's what we really try to do with this podcast too, right? I mean, I think this podcast, if you go back and you listen to the early episodes, you can hear the way that it's grown and changed, right? Like, I think we're calling this the 9th season.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Which doesn't mean we've been doing it 9 years, but we would tinker, we would reapproach it, we would try, okay, it's monthly, it's bi-weekly, it's whatever.
Right.
When I look at what really, really locked things into place, it was, you know, 4 years ago, man. And I can't believe that it was 4 years ago.
That's right.
The pandemic, when not only did Transmissions really lock into a weekly schedule that we have maintained since then, but we launched Radio Free Aquarium Drunkard. And that, to me, I think when I look back on it, in some ways, that is, in that moment with everybody home, right? And with people needing something, a balm, not just distraction, because I don't think that music offers just distraction. I think music actually creates something much more valuable than distraction. I think it creates the kind of space you need to feel expansive and process big ideas, right? So
right.
I think we were offering that. In a lot of ways, that feels like this sort of visionary moment for me of what is possible with Aquarium Drunkard. And when we had people's attention that way and the necessary covert conditions for some
for pirate radio,
you know, when we had all that working, I mean, that was such a great experiment, and, you know, ended when it needed to end. But when I think about, you know, the possibility of Aquarium Drunkard, I think the kind of possibilities that this sort of new model could help facilitate, I look back on it and I think, wow, that was really a cool, I mean, dude, we even had the Adult Swim special during
That's
that
right.
time.
Yeah,
I don't think
height
that,
of the pandemic.
I don't think everybody remembers that because it was just like anything else, right? There was a million things happening on the internet then too.
Right.
But what that was, so there was like a, you did, Kramer did a Tonight Zone, right?
Yeah, there was the Tonight Zone episode paired with a lot of visuals that Mark Neely and I had come up with to accompany it. And I think it was the Adult Swim simulcast that night. I think it was 3+ hours.
Yeah.
It was lengthy. Yeah.
I mean, but that's another thing, you know, when you're kind of like laying out all the different things that we are involved in, you get the Aquarium Drunkard picture show in the mix as well. So, I mean, at this point with zines, visuals, radio, podcasts, Radio Free Aquarium Drunkard on Dublab Sirius, I mean, it's, you know, the label side on ORG Music, there's a lot happening, and it's all, you know, the sort of nexus of it all, the sort of center of gravity is Aquarium Drunkard, the site. And so to me, I think that this is, I'm really excited to offer, to start this next chapter, essentially. You know what I mean? What does 20 years from now look like? Who knows? But
who knows? You know, I was thinking about this the other day, but The site historically publishes, 2 to 3 times a day, 5 days a week. If you lumped that into a month, if that was, a standard traditional print magazine, that would be a pretty hefty mag.
That's right. I mean, and that to me, again, thinking about all that stuff and thinking about the archives and the archives are something that there's lots of stuff that it's just like anything else, hard to maintain. And, the churn and burn model of the internet. I think about the large swaths of the internet that are functionally inaccessible,
Right.
These days. That said, the Aquarium Drunkard site, you might come across the occasional dead link or bad YouTube, video or
Sure.
whatever other thing, but the writing and the content, a term I hate and we don't really love to use and don't think of what we do as content, but
Right.
then you find yourself saying it anytime you're talking about this shit.
Yeah.
But that stuff is still there. You can go back and check pretty far back in the archives, which is really saying something. So, I think that this is a really, I'm excited to see where this goes from here, and I'm excited to see what develops from it. You know what I mean? When you look out, I mean, I think that the case for something like Aquarium Drunkard is pretty clear. People do want a place where, where the focus is not so much on release dates, I mean, we do it the same as anybody else, right? If somebody's offering interviews and we really want to talk to them and it's because they're putting a new record out, it's not like we go out of our way to not tie to release dates, but we'll cover something that came out 3 years ago, we'll
Yeah.
cover something that came out, 63 years ago. Who knows? There's like any there's any anything is fair game. I think of Aquarium Drunkard as a little bit unstuck in time, and that's a cool thing. And one of the features I think that makes the site unique on top of everything else.
Yeah, I think being non-release date contingent is huge. I think so many interesting things get passed over by a lot of media outlets because they feel like it's no longer, timely, which is when you're talking about art, that's just silly,
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the great strength and power of art, right? Is that it can be something that you feel it when you hear it. And you think about something like that recent Alice Coltrane release, which is just the Carnegie Hall thing, which is absolutely mind-blowing, right? And you think about how that sat on a shelf and nobody heard it, and then when people did, it sort of has the power to completely flip everybody's lid. And I think that that's one of the things that I appreciate so much about AD is the openness to just talking about music that we really feel passionate about. It doesn't necessarily have to have a news peg. The news peg is that
No.
we're interested in it. The news
It,
peg is that
yes.
we think it's worth hearing, And hopefully, I think after 20 years, that imprint of some level of quality, is something there. I mean, not that everybody's gonna like everything we post about. That would be impossible,
Right.
but I do think that vision, fueled by your vision and your sort of guiding aesthetic sensibilities, we've helped to make sure that only the good shit thing, isn't just a boast, right? It's not
No,
just a
no. And
brag.
one of the things I do on the side is music supervision for commercials and film, et cetera. And I remember having this discussion several years ago with an ad agency exec for a commercial we were working on. And one of the songs that I'd put forward to be in the piece, I think it was, I don't know, 30 years old or something. And they loved it and they're pushing back. They're like, well, it's not new. And I was like, well, if it's new to you, then it's new. It doesn't matter if the track is 6 months old or 60 years old. And I think in terms of Aquarium Drunkard across the board, that's always been, kind of top of mind. If it's new to you, then it's new.
Yeah. One of my favorite things to think about when I look back over the decades of Aquarium Drunkard is certainly you see the way different things get folded in to the Aquarium Drunkard Sonic world, right? I mean, like, we post about ECM and jazz stuff a lot more than we used to, right?
Right.
I mean, like, that's something that's grown. You see stuff that is, like, more on our minds. I would probably write more about country rock earlier on than I tend to now. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's the other thing about it to me, is that in this own weird way, it documents the obsessions and the fixations of each of us as contributors, right? I mean, to me, we've managed to push so much. We've managed to push the boundaries of what Aquarium Drunkard is in really cool ways. The Videodrome stuff that Eric writes, you know, I think that's some of my favorite film criticism and film writing on the internet, and it's perfectly at home at AD. I think about you writing about, is it Rolling Thunder, that movie way back when?
No, do
you
remember? Right. Yeah, yeah.
Which they sample in Super Wolf, I think.
Yeah, the Will Oldham Matt Sweeney project, yeah.
I mean, I remember reading that in like 2013 on the site or something. And so for Eric to bring the film side of things to the table, for the book club to expand more and more into like literature and literary matters, maintaining a foot, of course, in like music books, but we featured horror, science fiction, histories, you know, biographies, literary fiction, all that stuff, you know, alongside music books. So that's yet another area that we have expanded into. I think that this podcast has accommodated conversations about so many topics, right? That like would be harder to get to in a standard music interview, but because of the space that we've carved out, you know, we've had conversations about, you know, films and books and stuff like that on the podcast, but also, you know, weird heady talks about the nature of time or or race, you know, or economics, all sorts of political. It's like all this stuff, there's room for it. But I think that one of my favorite things about Aquarium Drunkard is that it is both an expansive entity that can move in different directions, yet somehow it maintains a center. And I think that whatever that tricky balance is, you and I have talked about it. We're like, we don't know if we could actually explain exactly how we do it, but we do know when we are doing it or not doing
That's
it.
That's right.
Right.
That's
you know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah. The nature of the site has always been ever evolving. And there was, even in the early days of the website, I had something in the about section, like a sentence or two that basically said, you know, the site's interest change as its creators do, or something to that effect. I think that's still true today. As you mentioned, you know, the site has leaned a lot more into different sonic palettes than, say, it was writing about 10 years ago. And I think that, you know, that will just continue to be the course as it moves on.
Yeah, I think that it's weird because somehow, you know, somehow it just makes sense, right? I mean, when I think about, there are extremes to the aesthetic too, right? You know, like there've been times where there has been music that, like, the line between ambient and drone can be an arbitrary one, right?
Sure.
But sometimes we featured heavier noises. Sometimes we featured lighter noises, poppier noises. There's been times where garage rock is a bigger focus, than other times. To me, the fact that it's evolved while keeping somewhat of a through line just speaks to that sensibility that you've helped to curate and maintain. And, you know, I feel like the word curate has taken a big beating over the last couple decades. And it carries with it all these notions of pretension and stuff. But I also think that in an age where we can listen to almost anything, we really can. I mean, it's not all on official streaming services, but if you really went out and tried to find stuff, you could find almost anything, right? And listen to it. In an age where that's the kind of access that you have to music, I think that there's an importance and a necessity of people who can say, Yes, I've listened to a lot of it, but here's the stuff that is of particular interest, right, to me. Here's the stuff that really moved me. Here's the stuff that made an impression or seemed, you know, of especially high quality or especially interesting or frightening,
yeah,
or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
you need those trail guides, you know?
You do. And I don't know, it's funny, how did curation become such a loaded word? You know, that is fascinating, but you're right, it has been. But that stuff is important. You know, yeah. One of the things you and I have discussed is, you know, this growing trend of the, you know, the so-called newsletterification of the internet, which I don't think anybody wants for myriad of reasons. But for one, you know, you can go to a site, you know, like Aquarium Drunkard, and say you land there because, you know, we're writing about something that Herbie Hancock did in the late 70s, right? But then you might see an adjacent article about, you know, that thing that you wrote about just the other day with Nathan Salzberg and James Elkington, where they're,
yeah,
you know, they're riffing on and transmuting, you know, a 1988 Nina Cherry tune.
Right.
You know, I mean, again, maybe that's not your thing, but maybe it is. And, you know, I think that is just, you know, it's another signifier of having a site that does have a lot of different contributors of a similar mind, but, you know, writing about different things.
Yeah. And I think that the thing for me is that the more that we have done with Aquarium Drunkard, the more we've created, the more we've honed in on our sensibility. You know, I think that what unites something like a Miles Davis with Nathan and Jim Elkington doing, you know, Nina Cherry, is just like a sort of a fearless spirit of exploration. And I think that Aquarium Drunkard has great explorability as a website. And it's also that thing to me of, I worked in record stores for a long time. That's really what I consider my sort of musical education.
Right.
To me, what makes a record store such a special place was that feeling of going in for one thing and, oh, I'm going to go buy the new Smile album, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but while you're there, you're peeking around and you spot something completely unrelated. You go, oh, what's this? You know, I don't know. What's this Malcolm McLaren record sound like or whatever? And then you take that too. It's like giving somebody, I think that what it is, and we've been very fortunate over the years to have a great many supporters in the music community, right? People who we cover, who recognize that support. But I never felt quite as seen or as appreciated as when Jeff Tweedy shouted us out in the New York Times.
Oh, and, right.
You know, I think really put his finger accurately on my hope, at least, and I know it's yours too, which is that there's a spirit of generosity to the site. I thought that that was such a nicely put thing, right? Like reciprocity and generosity are such incredible tools and incredible ways of interacting with each other. I think it's a reciprocal feedback loop, right? In the best case scenario, the readers are getting something out of it. We're getting something out of it. The artists are getting something out of it because we're celebrating and expanding the parameters of that art, you know? And so to me, I really do think that curation, which, like, as you mentioned, when I say it's a loaded term, I mean, I'm thinking about just like, if you tell somebody, oh, I'm a curator, you know, they're going
right,
to assume
right.
that you're kind of like hoity-toity or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I think that at its core, real curation is simply just that spirit of generosity applied to assembling an effort of things, you know, putting effort towards bringing together these things and putting them into some sort of way that makes sense to us, and when it works best, it translates to the reader or the listener or the viewer, you know, the
yeah.
same way.
Yeah. I think somehow that term kind of became semi-synonymous with, you know, maybe gatekeeping, which is obviously not the case.
I would say that
it has more to do with, you know, let's say community. You know, you're referencing your
yeah.
days working in a record store. I used to work at a record store in college, and you know, that was a sense of community in a lot of ways. But as you mentioned, you could go in there looking for one thing and you stumble upon something else, if not by your own design, from talking to a clerk
Yeah,
or
exactly.
another customer
You
or
hear
whatever it
something
was.
in the playing overhead. What's this? You know, that sort of thing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's funny too because gatekeeping is another one of those terms. I mean, I do think that, you know, gatekeeping in the sense of trying to keep people out, you know, I do dislike that because I've actually never been all that interested in the kind of hoarding of artistic greatness. You know what I
Absolutely not.
mean?
No.
I think that what we do is driven out of the opposite impulse, right? We want to share what we found. And if somehow tomorrow, you know, whatever, you know, Eberhard Weber becomes like as popular as Steely Dan on Twitter or whatever, and there's like, you know, Weber memes or whatever, I would find that absolutely hilarious and great, you know? But I do believe like, yeah, we're sharing what we care about, and there's a and so the gatekeeping, whatever that is, that's just simply understanding maybe that we can't cover everything, and so we're gonna say that there are certain things that we leave to other more able critics. You know what I mean? That's the other thing, is that I don't feel like Aquarium Drunkard tries to be everything to everyone. We're trying to be Aquarium Drunkard, and if you're down with that, then hopefully will be a good thing for you. You know, we're not going to let you down. I think that most people feel that way, and I'm excited to have that continue as we move into this new Aquarium Drunkard. I mean, are you thinking of it as 4.0, 5.0, 6.0? What model number are we on with the Aquarium Drunkard at this point?
Yeah, I'd have to put some thought to that. But yeah, we're certainly getting up there. But to your point earlier, I you know, years ago in an interview, someone asked me, you know, tonally how I would describe, you know, what we do. And I said this at the time, and I think it still rings true. It's you know, when you're younger and you're hanging out at your friend's house and you're talking to their older brother and they're, you know, hipping you to these records just out of a sense of you know, just wanting to turn you on to something. I think that's kind of the spirit that we have always tried to inhabit. You know, we're there to share what we're interested in the hopes that, you know, other people will be as well.
Your friendly older sibling,
That's right.
Aquarium Drunkard. Well, Justin, that's definitely how I consider you. And as we wrap up and encourage everybody to head over to Aquarium Drunkard, subscribe, and you know, let us know that this site does mean something to you. And I think that we put a great value on the people who care about Aquarium Drunkard. We understand that these are people who really care about music and who care deeply and who are interested in perhaps a more cultivated and thoughtful relationship with music, you know, than simply I'm going to put on a playlist and let the sounds wash over me. Although if you want to press play on some
AI, this is
Aquarium Drunkard,
not.
yeah, we're not AI. We're not AI. There's real people involved here. And this new adventure is going to be how you keep people involved at Aquarium Drunkard. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. But yeah, Justin, dude, it's always good hanging and catching up with you. I hope that folks enjoyed this little inside ba it's a pretty inside baseball episode, but I think it's probably of value to folks. So I appreciate you taking the time to do it, dude.
Absolutely.
I'm Jason P. Woodbury. Thanks so much for listening. I write, produce, and host this show. Transmissions is edited by Andrew Horton, and our music comes from Frank Mastin. You can find more by visiting him at Mastin on Bandcamp. Art for this episode was created by Ian Everett, and our executive producer is Justin Gage, Aquarium Drunkard's founder. Don't miss his weekly radio program, The Aquarium Drunkard Show, on Sirius XMU, Channel 35 at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, each and every Wednesday night. If you're looking for a way to boost this show, consider sending this episode to a friend. You can also rate and review the podcast on Apple or wherever else you listen. I care a lot less about that than I do you heading over and subscribing to Aquarium Drunkard, though. So that's one great way you can support this podcast. Transmissions is part of the Talkhouse Podcast Network. Visit the Talkhouse for more interviews, fascinating reads, and podcasts. Next week on Transmissions, an interview with Pat Thomas. Pat Thomas is a record producer and reissue supervisor and author and musician. We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff. Allen Ginsberg, Judy Sill, his band Mushroom, and much, much more. I hope you will come back and join us. Thanks so much for being with us on this special episode of Transmissions. Lots more to check out in the archives. So be well until we're back, and hang in there. This transmission is concluded.